Can I have your attention? These beaches are officially closing for today. That means absolutely no more swimming.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Catchmar. How are you guys today? This is scrubbing up. This is not scrubbing up. Oh, this is lifeguards off duty with Dr. Michael Catchmar.
I threw him off
with
that, yeah. Big time.
This is today's date is, today is June the 7th, the year of our Lord, 2023 AD. And welcome to Lifeguards Off Duty. We had some technical problems today. Camera's a little bit off here. So anyway, we have the crew today. We have Sean, who's joining. We'll get him here's Tyler. Yeah. And you guys, you worked on the beach today, right?
Yeah, I sat there inhaling smoke all day.
Yeah, so we have a forest fire going. Go to the iPad. I'll put my phone in here. I'll show you some.
Yeah,
pictures.
So apparently it's going on in Canada. Like all these forest fires all over the place popped up at once. And then also there was a forest fire in Jackson.
Really?
Yeah, yesterday. I think it's like 75% contained right now.
Really?
I heard that's only according to my girlfriend, so I don't...
I heard yesterday...
She probably got that from TikTok.
It was 30 acres of fire.
So can you...
They shut down like three major roads.
Can you put my iPhone on?
Yeah, let's figure out.
Yeah. I'll plug it in right now. Ready? I want to show you. So I took this some pictures here.
My camera's really shaky today because
right there.
I'm on the one
click, click
of the
that
table.
To start. There you go. So let me give you this. Let me put the video on. Ready? Hang on 1 second. So this is my office down in Barney. This is sunny day. There's look at this. That's all smoke. So that's come out of my office. And I've never seen it like this. This is not fog. This is smoke. And you can't even, the sun, you could hardly even see it. Look at the sun.
It's orange.
Look at that. Like, that's weird. Look at that. Very weird. That's the sun.
It looks like the Mexico filter in like TVs and movies.
Yeah, no, this is real. This is just it, man. It's like wild. Look at that. Huh? Isn't that crazy?
You ever see the movie The Mist?
No,
it's an adaptation of a Stephen King novel. It's these people in whatever rural town America, and this just thick fog descends over the town.
Oh,
and
yeah,
out of it starts coming monsters and stuff like that. And then these people barricade themselves inside a grocery store and all end up going crazy.
Yeah.
But that's what it was like. I was driving over the bridge to get here after work today, and that's all I could think about because it was just this wall of haze.
So they're saying this is
really
all
creepy. You're saying you think a nuke went off somewhere.
No, they're saying this is all from Canada. That's crazy. That's wild. It's wild that it's all from Canada. I mean, that's a lot of smoke. That's some big fire. So anyway, we worked this weekend. We worked Memorial Weekend. I just worked yesterday. I'm working Friday. So the water's,
this is the air tracker. So we're right in the middle of the worst part right now. Let me see if I can share this. Yeah. Wow. So whatever, the air currents are sweeping down from Canada and the Northeast is just getting smacked. But there's smoke all the way as far as Dallas.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So, you know, can you imagine when you talk about nuclear war and everything, can you imagine if the bombs blew up in Canada, you know, the radiation. Look how far
travel,
and how quick.
Yeah.
Look at that. That's wild. And this is just smoke.
They say that a lot of sand from the Sahara Desert gets swept up into, you know, airstream goes across the Atlantic Ocean and ends up fertilizing the Amazon.
Yeah. When I'm
which
down,
is pretty cool.
Yeah, this time of year in Tortola, the sky starts to get orange, or yellow. It's like yellow, and it's what do you call it? It's the Sahara sands coming across. Tortola's still further enough. It's actually the northernmost extreme of the Sahara winds coming across. Everything changes in the summertime. Instead of northeast, the wind's coming southeast, and it comes right across. And that's where you get your tropical waves next, and then you'll have your hurricanes. So anyway.
Ty, would you believe Cashmore was thinking about buying another boat?
What?
Well, I'm going to get a boat eventually.
There's a great opportunity.
Let's hear about it.
No, I'm not going to get it. It's a boat. It's in St. Martin. It's I got a broker there. I know him real well. So they got a evidently what happened is a lot of people, what they did is when Corona hit, these people who had money and they bought these boats, right?
Uh-huh.
And like a 42-foot, 45-foot catamaran.
Just so they could get away.
They would get their kids and their wife and they go live on a boat. and they went down to like St. Martin, wherever they could. You know, and that they all closed these islands, so you couldn't go anywhere, but they were away from everything. You know, nobody thought how crazy it was going to be, and some people, like, they just ran to different parts of the world to isolate themselves. I mean, if you go to, you know, Tahiti or anywhere, I mean, it was, the islands were closed down. If you could be there, they weren't letting anybody in there, so chances of you getting sick were probably, you know, very small until things started to come around. So what's happening now is these boats that were bought in, like, 2000 and 2021, the corona's over, so they want to go back to their lives. So they're selling them. And these boats are like cream puff. They've never been really sailed. They just lived. They were like condos. They don't have that many hours on them, and they're built and tripped out to the max.
I think in terms of an apocalypse, you know how people have like the bug out vehicle? Mm-hmm. I think the bug out boat is the way to go.
Right?
Because there's just such a lower chance of someone rolling up on you in a bug out boat than,
well, safety is one thing, but you got to survive. You need water and you need food.
That's the thing. You can fish. Yeah, you can get food. You know how to fish.
Yeah, you could get
the water is going to be the issue at a certain point.
Yeah, but you got rainwater. You could live on it. There's some natural springs, especially in the Caribbean, but you got enough rain down there where you could save it.
How hard is it really to desalinate ocean water?
Well, not in the old
days. If I have a big enough boat where I can set up some sort of like rig where it like evaporates and then drips back down.
Yeah, you can. But I mean, that's the sailors did that. And they would collect rainwater. There's enough rain, you collect rainwater. You know, and there's islands that have water, and you need salt. So you need a couple of things. You need salt. People don't realize that. Without salt, you'll die. And you need vitamin C, or you get scurvy. So that's why the British sailors, they would have limes. You know, everybody talks about limes. They used to call people from England limeys, because when these ships, they would have whatever the Spanish were going against France or England, they would knock these ships down. They would float up, would be the limes. But you need vitamin C.
Isn't that why a lot of rum drinks, like, you put lime in?
Yeah, well, they have gin and tonic, or, you know, we got to have a lime, you know. Yeah. So it came from that, yeah. But you need that. So you can survive. I guess you're right. You know, if you're out in the middle, the ocean is if your enemy is going to be other people trying to steal stuff from you, maybe in a boat.
Any enemy. Airborne pathogen, you're much less likely to get it on a boat. Zombies.
No way.
They can't swim. If they can, those are like elite zombies. Not even depicted in cinema.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What else? Okay. Earthquakes, even if there's like some sort of fault slip and a tsunami happens, if you're far enough out, it's just at that point just like a little bump.
The thing is,
there's a lot of advantages to the bug out boat.
If you had a sailboat, you could go for a long time. You don't without a lot of energy. I mean, it's not going to be comfortable, but you could survive. You know,
even better, you get a nuclear powered boat.
Yeah, nothing's comfortable in the end of the world, Cashmore.
But if you live around here, what would be a problem, like, you know, where we, like in New Jersey or wherever in the United States, is food. You know, unless you live on a farm, and then people are going to try to steal it from you. You know, and in the wintertime, you're going to freeze to death. You need wood to burn. Yeah, no, the Caribbean, you don't have to worry about the temperature. You got hurricanes, you know, but if you know it's coming, I guess you could, you know, you have to get a barometer. And if you have shelter, you could probably have a better chance of surviving. Yeah, I agree with you, down in the Caribbean.
Continuing with the limes, I've heard the only reason you put limes in Coronas is because to cover up the skunk smell or taste from them. They have the clear bottles, right? I mean, I was drinking one, but like brown and green bottles, because the UV like keeps the beer from getting skunked. The lime just makes it taste less skunked. Not that like it's a special beer to put lime into.
Well, I tell
it's
you,
just a, it's a regular, it's a Mexican lager.
I tell you where I know where lemons came in. There was a beer
that makes a lot of sense, though.
Yeah, but there was a beer from it wasn't the first beer that I had from Mexico is called Sol beer, and Sol beer
come in dark bottle.
S-O-L, and it was in a white bottle, but you drank that with lemons, and in fact it was bars. There was one in Seaside, and they specialized in it. You couldn't get this anywhere. You'd have to go down to like Florida. There's only certain states that had it, and people would ask me to bring it back. I mean, it was a bar. It was called the Sawmill, and they would have these long fluted glasses, and they would fill them up. They put lemons in there, halves, and then pour the beer, and it would fizz, and you drink it. It would give it a really good flavor. And I think the flavor is where, maybe that's where it came from. Putting, not limes, but lemon in beer is...
I've never had lemon in beer.
Yeah, yeah. So Sol Beer, you should look it up. You could pull it up. So Sol Beer was, and it's still, you could buy it. That was the first, before Corona, there was Sol, S-O-L beer.
I don't think I've had that before.
Yeah, I think I've heard of it, but I want to know what beer. Kind of beer it is.
It's from Mexico. Lager. No, it's not a
bright and refreshing lager.
Is a lager. Okay, there you go.
I didn't cash, think cash, wrong. You keep
so say here
cash,
it is. There it is.
Cash, yeah. Keep hitting one.
Yeah, yeah.
On the black magic.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, but yeah, I keep putting mine. But see now, it, see how say put down here how to drink it, and that's
how to drink Sol. You want me to look that up?
No. But you get the bottles and you put the what do you call it? Lime in there. Lemon. So enjoy.
Best enjoy, not lime.
No, I always had it with lemon. Never had lime.
I want to try it with lemon now. It sounds like it could be good though.
That's I think that's, we always had it in the wine cellar. It was with lemon, not lime.
I'm not a big beer guy, but Blue Moon with an orange is so good.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't like Belgian beers.
Really?
Like the Belgian whites.
I don't like any IPAs, but
those taste skunk to me.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I think it's like a weird aftertaste. I'm not a fan.
Well, anyway, so let's want to talk
about... Wait, Cash, do you have a favorite beer? Bud Light?
Yeah, Bud Light. Now it's cheap. You could get it real cheap. Right? Nobody wants it.
I'm going to buy all the Bud Light.
You know, the funny thing is, back in the day when I was a kid, you had Budweiser and just like one, it was Bud. There was no Bud Light. There was none of that. You had, I don't know when Heineken came in, but Miller, the first light beer that I remember was Miller Light, and used to get it, and it was really cheap. But there was things like Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually a big fan of PBR.
What's that? Yeah.
Well, they used to have them for $2 at Hook's for the cans. And what they would do is I would get a PBR and a shot of whiskey, and the bartender would turn it upside down and then pour the shot into like, the little scoop at the bottom of your can, and you take the shot out of that and drink.
What's the one
the beer?
What's the one beer from Pennsylvania? It's been around for a million years.
Yingling?
No. It's another name. Rolling Rock.
Oh.
Rolling Rock.
I didn't know that was a PA beer.
I might be wrong, but I think it is. But Rolling Rock was around for a long, long time, and that was a big beer when I was a kid. It was cheap. It was really pretty good. You know. But really, everybody drank Budweiser. That was they made it up in Newark. But Budweiser was like the biggest beer. Let me see, what else? Pabst Blue Ribbon. What else was there?
I still think Bud Light.
Tuborg was around. Tuborg. I don't know. I don't know too many of the stuff from Europe. I don't know if it really got to the United States that much.
I don't know any European beers. Do you know?
Heineken?
Stella Artois is a Canadian.
I tell you, Rolling Rock, though, they used to have, so there was a place.
Peroni.
There was a bar in Seaside Heights. It was the wine cellar. And what we drank there, they had Rolling Rocks. So you get a Rolling Rock. It was the red, cups, plastic cups. The biggest ones you could get. And that was about, and they fill it up with Rolling Rock, about 50 cents for drink. And you know you have five of those, and you were so it was pretty good. That was pretty good beer, Rolling.
Honestly, like I would pay a lot of money to go back in time and like hang out with you guys when you were in your 20s and go to the wine cellar for a night.
It was pretty wild. Yeah, we
that really sounds like a good time.
It was. I tell you one thing, we didn't worry about none of this shit. All the stuff that you guys worry about. No, well, I can tell you the Vietnam War. When that was going on, that was worrisome, but then that was done. So then, that time between, 70s, 80s, I mean, it was really, let me see, when did AIDS come in? That kind of could have put kibosh on things for a while.
But it really was like...
That was in the 80s, so that was in the late...
Your 20s and 30s were kind of like the prime of America
No, I tell you what, the 70s, like right after Vietnam War, so you figure... Right around 76. I started the beach in 77, so the war was over. So 77, so 1977 to probably 87. That was some, well, when AIDS came in, that was a little shaky. But there was a good time there. I mean, people say right after the World War II, But yeah, it was different. It was a different world. You could do a lot of things. You didn't have to worry about getting, that much locked up or it wasn't this kind of... nastiness. I don't know. I mean, people say, oh, maybe I'm wrong. With my world anyway, you know, we didn't see a lot of it. But you had the war. There was a lot of unrest in the 60s. I mean, people were getting killed. And so I guess it's where you were, who you were.
How did the 60s thing fade out? The Martin Luther King movement?
Well, you got to remember, that wasn't my time, you know. I mean, I was born in 57. So my year, I graduated high school in 76. But what I remember, there's a great book. It's in a movie. It's called, it's by Hunter Thomas, his name?
Thompson.
Thompson. It's called Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't agree with the whole thing, but there's one point there he talked about what happened with the movement, you know, the hippie movement. And basically, they were looking for some utopia, and they never found it. And that whole thing kind of, you know, turned around. I think Woodstock was probably the pivotal point, you know, 69. And then everybody got assassinated.
Woodstock's insane. Do you know, anything about that?
Yeah.
There was a child born on stage from a pregnant woman. I think there was a whale carcass brought to one of the stages after that stage was not in use anymore.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix flew in on a helicopter and didn't do a sound check and performed within the 5 minutes of landing. It's the nuttiest thing in.
Was that his greatest ever performance of the national anthem?
Oh, it was.
Which is the worst,
I think, that
version of the national anthem ever performed.
That it sounds bad.
In the moment, I understand why it was incredible.
War. It sounds bad.
I think that, you know.
Oh, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, it sounds like
Do
war.
You think he butchered it on purpose?
It sounds like
no,
war.
No. Well, there's what bombs. It was. No, he did. Yeah, right. He was doing his version. And it was very controversial at the time because they felt it was being disrespectful. But Woodstock.
Context.
One thing about Woodstock that I could tell you is that I don't know how many people were there, 500,000. It was a huge crowd. And it was really no violence whatsoever. It was, you know, it was very a lot of peace. So many people together. Even if you did that today, it would be hard not to have some crime. And the also thing that there was so much drug there. A lot of people have written about this and saying that it's probably never going to ever be where, you know, all those people and the entertainers were simultaneously stoned out of their mind on acid. There's probably more acid. That was a drug of choice back then. You know, acid, and not, you know, marijuana, but acid. And they say, Hendrix was tripping on acid. Mm-hmm. They say Santana, you know, when he did that one solo or whatever they did, they said he took five hits of acid.
Well, they say that Jimi Hendrix put it in his headband when he performed. Yeah.
He would sweat on it, and it would leak into him.
That was an amazing thing. But then what happened after that, so you asked me when it changed. So that was the Summer of Love. And then right after that, you had the Rolling Stones had a concert at Altima, and somebody got stabbed. And, you know, it just started going downhill after that. You know, and then you had the civil rights stuff that was cooking, percolating. Of course, the Vietnam War, that was getting really heavy. You were getting about 100 guys a week dying there. So I don't know when it faded out, but I think what the big thing was is that the illusion. They thought they were going to save the world.
Your first year on the beach was 77, you said?
Yeah.
So when you guys are coming back, even your fifth year, what's going on in the world that you guys, what's your COVID? What's going on? What are you guys talking shit about?
Well, I tell you what, in 77, you know, what happened was is that you had Nixon went out, you had the Watergate and all of that, and you had Carter. And you had the oil embargo, you had no gasoline, you had to wait in line. They had hostages in Iran.
Did you get gas because you were in school going
for
medicine?
They still had gas, but you had to take it was odd even days. You had to only get it, they rationed it, and then interest rates went up to 17%, 18%. But I was young, so it didn't really. I mean, what I remember is that they with just like now, you had Carter was very to the left, and they had a thing called they invented this thing called affirmative action. And this was when it first really came about. And what that is that you would get anything you want. If you were poor, it didn't have nothing to do with your ability, say to go to college. If you were poor, you go to college. You get a scholarship. They pay for your board, you know, your college entrance, your room and board, even if you were an idiot, you know. And a lot of those people never made it because they just didn't have the ability to do it. So that was the first inklings of that. Now you have it's called equity. So you had all of that going on. You had the unrest. And then I'm trying to think what, you know, things, how it started.
There AIDS, was, it's a guess, right?
AIDS was, when I was doing my residency, or just as I was becoming a doctor, AIDS became a big thing. That was scary. A lot of people died.
Did you guys have, like, dumb things you had to do during CPR training to prevent AIDS being spread?
I don't remember that, but I know that...
And not dumb, I just mean precautious, plastic bag.
I tell you how AIDS went. AIDS went like this. In the beginning, you didn't know how it was spread. You didn't know if it was toilet bowls or I don't know how long that lasted, maybe 6 months. But then they kind of found out what it was and how it was spread. Eventually, you realize it was very hard to get it. But for a long, long time, you know, everybody was afraid to have any contact. You know, so I don't know really what to tell you. You're trying to remember now when you put me on a spot like this. But I would tell you that when I was doing my residency, I was very worried about getting AIDS. I mean, because you're operating and you cut yourself sometime. You don't know who has AIDS. In the beginning, there was no way to test it, none. And that's what Fauci got involved. That's why, you know, it's funny to talk about Fauci. Back then, he was controversial. There's allegations that something, I don't know, maybe he didn't, you know, we can't say anything about it. We're gonna get knocked off of our radio.
Can't even joke about it, man.
No, I wouldn't, but he was very controversial. They went after him. There was Senate hearings and everything. But the AIDS was kind of crazy. So I don't know. In the 80s, I'm just trying to remember. So that was the 70s, 80s. I was in school most of the time. I don't think it was too much crazy. I tell you what was really, I thought was the best times was the 90s, from my perspective. You know, I mean, you had a crash and the economy went down the tubes. And then the 90s, that was like the late 80s, early 90s. And things started to grow and grow and get better and better. So, you know, by 2000, you know, things were doing pretty well, I think. Anyway, that's what I remember. What do you know, when were you guys, you weren't even, how old were you?
97.
Yeah. Yeah.
When did you get your plaque? 90.
I think that's 92.
93.
You guys weren't even around.
Were you alive?
No, it was a year before I was born.
Yeah, you see that?
1994.
Yeah, so it was pretty wild back then. It was different. I think everybody will tell you every generation is different and what you think about. I think there was no internet. There was no, you didn't have cell phones. So you got to think about it was a different, you know, you meet somebody on the beach, say you had a girl.
There was no AI.
No, but there was, you had to call people up on a landline. So you had to have a phone somewhere. So we would have a lifeguard house. We would have a phone there where you could do the phone booth.
Would you guys argue on break who got to use the phone?
No, because, you know, you didn't call that much. It wasn't like you needed to. There wasn't that kind of, you know, world back then. It wasn't like you had to be in communication every minute, you say meet somebody and say, oh, call me. I'll call you after I get off work. You know, it was that kind of thing.
Was there ever a guard that was annoying with the phone that always had to be on it, though?
No, because somebody? we didn't, if you went on the boardwalk, there was no, I don't think anybody, you could use the phone in headquarters if you had to call your family or something, you know. People were calling. So we had phones on our lifeguard stands.
Yeah, the wire that went back to the
beach. So you'd have, you know, sometimes, you know, your parents would call you, but you'd have a girl call. If the girl called, that was like, oh, my God, you get your, you know, get really
if someone called the beach, could your stand get the call?
Yeah, the captain could connect it if it was, you know.
Could everyone hear the phone call?
No, only him. But if somebody picked it up, I think you could. I think if you picked it up at the time, but you wouldn't know that somebody was on a phone because it would just ring your phone. So I worked a switchboard. We had a switchboard. So you get the phone call coming in. It would light one of the holes. You plug the thing in, and you hear it in your headpiece. And say, oh, I need to speak to Mike Catchmore. So you would take the thing, and he's on Hamilton. You put it into the Hamilton button, and it would ring the phone in Hamilton. You pick it up. But I think everybody could hear it. I'm not 100% sure on that.
And did you ever have girls call you while you were
Yeah. Like a girlfriend, funny. You know. Like you didn't want to abuse it. But, yeah, it was you know. But, like, after you get somebody's phone number, you would go you know, you just get some money and make a phone call. Or like I said, we had lifeguard house. We had a landline. Everybody had a landline. Now nobody has a landline.
I remember when we bought my house in 2014, we had a landline. And then, we bought it in 2012, sorry. And then following Sandy, we just never even bothered getting another one.
I tell you.
We did the renovation because it's like, why? Everyone has a cell phone. Right. We would rather have, like, Wi-Fi.
I'll tell you the other thing that we had that, you know, you guys don't have. So when I first had my car, you'd had an AM, FM radio. AM was like you listened to. And then the new thing was FM. And there wasn't a lot of FM stations.
What's the difference between those?
I think FM is stereo. It's a good question. I don't know exactly. I think it's the longevity, how far it goes. I know it's better quality.
I think it's like reach has something to do with it.
Yeah, it might be reach, but you can look it up real quick. But when I was, 17 or 18, maybe 19, they came out with, even when I was younger than that, when I was 14, 15, you had cassette players. The cassettes were the size, they were probably 6 inches by 4 inches, okay? It's the amplitude and strength. So it's probably, carries a better signal, FM. And you would get stereo. Got to remember, too, stereo was a new thing. When I was a kid, stereo came out, and then you could hear it. Like Led Zeppelin used to make the music where you hear it back and forth.
Yeah, so, how cool was stereo?
Yeah, that was it was like amazing. But getting back, we would have cassettes. And again, they were these big, big 8-track cassettes. 8-track cassettes. They were, I'm showing people right here, they were probably 6-7 inches, maybe one by four, and you'd put them in. You had a cassette player, and you'd have these big boxes with maybe like 7 cassettes, and that's how you change it. And when you're driving, if you had FM, you wouldn't get really that many stations. They weren't many FM, but there was a lot of AM. But the music didn't sound good. You try to get better speakers in your car. Then, I remember right around when I was 17 or 18, they came out with little cassettes. Remember the cassettes, right? And so. I don't know if you ever saw that. And then after that, they had discs for your car.
I think that was such a better way to listen to music, like how hard it was to obtain it. Because when you'd buy a $10 CD, mm-hmm. like you'd have it for years or a while, and you listen to the whole album.
Now
we listen to Instagram Reels, and like that's the song that we listen to and put on.
We would buy a record, actually a piece of vinyl, and you'd have a needle. And you put it on,
and you listen to all 12 songs,
side. Yeah. You didn't have the ability to move around. What strikes me now is I'll be in my truck or wherever car, the amount of music that you could listen to
instantly,
and the quality is amazing. But like what we're doing right here, this studio and everything, you could not do this back in the day. It was impossible. It would cost probably at least $100,000 to set up something like this.
This isn't even like a music recording studio, but if someone from, like, if Jimi Hendrix walked in here and, like, looked at this, he'd
be like, oh, my God.
What can I make now, you know?
Yeah. Just forget about that. Just on our computer here. We have Restream and, this program here, but what's the one on Apple? We could record GarageBand. Music. GarageBand. That's probably like light years. I mean, if they had that.
No, the difference is like with Hendrix and like Zeppelin, like these people, Beatles, they had to be fantastic musicians to play it together as a band.
Yeah.
Because every time you recorded, tape would cost money. Now we can just record digitally and delete it and re-record instantly.
Yeah. So do you think?
That's a good point he makes. Yeah.
Do you think thinking that way, you can, like, go two ways. Like, the Beatles were as good as they were as a result of that?
No.
Or you could think, what could have the Beatles made if they had access to something like Fruity Loop Studios or any of these, like, digital
definitely, there's a lot of good music that comes because you can record whenever you want. The Beatles are super good because they spent, like, 3 or 4 years in Germany addicted to amphetamines, playing for 12 hours straight.
Yeah.
Getting
good. I think what it is Sean makes a good point. I think it was more expensive then, and if you were very good, so you didn't have to waste a lot of time. The quality was probably just as good, but not everybody had that quality or had access to that quality. And right now, if you look at the old TVs, they had transistors. I mean, everything is so small now, digital. The quality's a lot better, but it wasn't that bad either back then.
I mean, look at this. This TV right here probably cost you, what, like $100, $150 max?
Yeah.
That's better than any TV that was in my house that would have cost like $300-$400 when I was 10,
But I'm just trying to think what else. So you had things were a lot cheaper back then. Things were a lot simpler. Just like some people would have said, back in the 30s and 40s.
Like you were showing me your General Electric radio you had on the stand.
Yeah.
My Bose speaker that I spent, $100-something on 3 years ago is crapping out on me. It's fickle.
That radio is like 25 years old.
It's still working.
It's still working. I plugged it in. That was the radio I had on my, it's a GE.
Still gets the radio.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, it was good quality stuff, and that was out in the ocean for a long time. Yeah, I think
companies realize, like, if they just make worse products, they will buy them again in 5 years. While Cashmar still has his radio 25 years later before they figured it out.
I think what I think it is that to make a profit, they have to really make the stuff cheaper, quicker, and it's not as much quality.
No, but also not worrying about, like, how long it lasts. It helps them in the long run.
Listen, I remember my father, you know, back in the day, you know, and I remember I was a little kid, but the cars back in those days were made, out of steel.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they were like tanks. Of course, the gas mileage was, you know, but gasoline was maybe 25 cents a gallon. So, you know, it was different. Now everything's lighter but plastics was around for a long time. I'm just trying to remember what's different. The big thing is phones. You didn't have phones, so that was one thing. You wrote a lot of letters. When's the last time you guys wrote a letter? We would write letters. So you meet a girl, or a cousin. We would, you know, say I was in high school, and you met somebody, or you met a girl in the summer, wherever. You'd write letters. You'd write letters to people, or like I had friends in college, because it would cost a lot of money to call. You know, on a landline, it costs a ton of money. So you'd write a letter, and you send it out, and, you know, it'd take a couple of days, and then it'd come back. And that was an amazing thing. You'd write maybe 5-6 letters out. So we wrote a lot. And when I was in school, part of your training, I used to write 500-word essays all the time. They tell you, write about a butterfly, write about Washington, anything. So nobody writes letters. You send a text now, you know, but even that's not really long.
I think... spell check really fucked writing, because then like the demand for perfect grammar in writing, because you'd see it, like, all these mistakes, while like he was probably more free flow, just like writing down what I call word vomit, just like getting ideas across and like making points. Spell check, like, you see all the flaws before you even read a sentence.
Yeah, and
all the swiggly lines, all the
and I tell you another thing, back in those days, none of these people flew. You didn't fly that much. People drove a lot. I mean, spring break, if you went down in college, you went down to Florida. I mean, very rare if you hear anybody would fly. I mean, it would drive, you know, because it was just expensive. Mm-hmm. So that was that. Nobody, I don't know how many people went out of the country. It's just interesting times. But
talking lifeguarding, Doc, who I was sitting with on North, he got rid of his Corvette. I was so upset. Just
why did he do that?
He just was done with it. He never drove it. It sat in the garage.
Yeah, he had a beautiful car. But listen,
you ever have a cool car? What was like the hottest car you had?
Well, it was when I was a kid. I had a Jeep. You know, I tripped it out, and I had I bought an old pickup truck. It was a 3/4-ton Chevy pickup truck with a wood bed, and I put a new engine in it. This is back when I was 17, 18. So I put a new engine in it.
You did it yourself?
Yeah, my buddies and I. And
they did a little bit.
No, I did. No, we did. I did it all. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I was actually, see, back in those days, you just did it. You learned how to do it. I got an engine from the junkyard. It was a Blazer that was pretty new that was in a car accident. And, you know, we put a block and tackle in my garage, and we lowered it in. We, you know, we'd had no internet. That's another thing, too, you guys. You know, internet to figure out how to do it. And I put all special tires on it, new shocks, new mufflers.
Where did you go to learn how to do it? The library?
No, just from friends. And like, there was a four-wheel drive shop up in Lakewood, you know, past northern part of Lakewood. I'd drive up there and ask him for advice, you know. I mean, there's mechanics. Yeah, you just learn. I mean, it wasn't. Engines, I'll tell you what, back in the day, they were a lot more simple than they are now. I mean, you had carburetors. So there was spark plugs, carburetors. You had points. You know, you had it. You know, you opened it up. You know, you had to deal with that. So it wasn't the electronics. So it was a lot easier, actually, I think. But so that was my cool thing. I built that truck.
Yeah, your hottest car was an old pickup truck that had a Blazer engine.
So you know how you see these trucks here
You didn't get a Corvette.
When I was real young, do you see how everybody was like, you know, four wheel drive trucks all built out, the big tires.
Yeah,
I had that in 1978. 77. So that was rare.
You've never been a sports car guy.
No, when I got because then what happened is I went to college. I didn't have any money, man. You know, so I didn't have the money. I didn't, you know, I couldn't afford a sports car. I had when I was in school, I had a hand-me-down car. It was a couple $100. And then when I got into, when I was in school in Philadelphia, I had a piece of shit, You know, I remember going over Ben Franklin Bridge, and I was always worried that the muffler was going to fall off, because you know, it did. I mean, I used to bring that place, that car, to have the muffler, jewelry rigged, you know, because we didn't have any money. I wouldn't have any. And then when I got my residency and I started to make money, I bought my first car. That was kind of like a little bit of a sports car. I don't remember what it was. All I can tell you is it had a sunroof, which was, you know.
Very in style.
Yeah, and it was like multicolors. So it was like kind of blue and white. Mm. I can't, for life of me, you know, maybe some kind of Chevy.
What year was this? This is when you started making money.
Let me see, 80, when I started my residency, so 80 to 84. So 85, 86, 87. So say like 85, 86. Impala maybe? I don't know.
I know it was driving an Impala.
It was something with a sunroof. Let me see.
He was driving a Hugo.
No, none of those cars. It was something, it was multicolors. And
His was probably from the 70s, though.
No. It was a brand new car.
Oh, okay.
No, it would probably. I would say probably. Let me see. 80.
I love the boxy
84.
Car. 80s look.
I'd say 85, 86, maybe right around there.
Doesn't that look like an American car? The 80s, like thick.
Yeah, I was never a fan of it though. This is an Impala.
No, but look for 80s, like the late 80s, late 80s cars, late 80s. You're in early 80s, late 80s. If I see it, I would recognize it. You know. So
I love the BMW like that.
Ferraris and
no. But it had a sunroof, and these are the late 80s. I have no idea.
Cashmore had a DeLorean.
Nah, it wasn't anything, but it was a nice car. I mean, it was great to drive, and of course, you know, eventually I had a Cadillac because my dad worked for General Motors, you know, and he thought a Cadillac was, you know, you made it when you had a Cadillac, so I had to get a Cadillac. I've had a lot of cars because I used to lease them.
Your car you got in the driveway is pretty nice.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, F-150.
I like that truck.
But I've had. You asked me what one of the best cars I had was a Honda. I had two Honda Accords. I had a what else did I have? A Toyota. Was it Honda? There was another one. I had some couple Toyotas. Can't remember the ones. Legend was that Toyota Legend? Who was the Legend? I'm trying to think. But I've had tons and tons. You know, I had a Subaru. I've had all kinds of stuff. You know, but
just so the listeners know, this is on your doctor salary, definitely not your lifeguard salary.
No. I think if you ask me, like, what's my day. Well, you know, the one that I built myself. You know, I really like
that.
That's your favorite? Nah, but I really like that. I think, like I tell you, this truck I have is one of my best. It's a Ford F-150, you know, four-wheel drive. I mean, that thing drives really nice. It's really a nice vehicle. But anyway, let's before we get too far, let's talk about a little bit about this. I wanted to bring this up because about lifeguarding, these stinging jellyfish, which are new to our area. And I don't know if you could pull it up, but I just want to make a point about this because, you know, from a lifeguard standpoint, I could see this puts another dimension of.
I haven't heard about this.
Yeah. So there's this, dangerous clinging jellyfish found creeping the waters of New Jersey. So evidently there's this new species of jellyfish that they're not new, but they have not been in this area for a long, long, long time. And one thing about jellyfish, if you lifeguard in Florida or, you know, Australia, Caribbean, you know, jellyfish could kill you. The box jellyfish are really dangerous, but the man of war, at least you could see him. But if you get hit by those tentacles, the man of war, you know, it floats. It's got kind of like a bluish bubble. It's like an air sac. But those, their tentacles could go, you know, many, many feet, 4, 5, 6 feet. And if you get them to touch you, like you get burned. And if it hits you in the face, you could get nauseous. You get really sick. I mean, it could incapacitate you. And so if you have a very calm day in the ocean and you're watching the people and one of these jellyfish rubs up against somebody, they could just, you know, pass out or have severe pain or go down. And so we're never used to that. When we get jellyfish, people come out of the water and say, oh, I got stung, you know, they're itchy. But you never had to make a rescue. These things could really, hey, look, saddle man paralyzed by rope. Well, that's a wave now. Mm-hmm. But there is... I was snorkeling off Florida Keys, and it was a bunch of my buddies. And this we were in college, and one of the guys with me got hit in the face with a man of war jellyfish. The
stinger.
Yeah, the what do you call it?
Tentacles.
I mean, he was like passing out. His face blew up. He had a hard time breathing. He was going into, you know, anaphylactic shock. We had to get him in a boat.
These are some cool-ass looking jellyfish.
So which of the ones? That's a man of war right there. See that one right there? Yeah. So show people that. That's a man of war. And they're in Florida, you know.
And then I'll look up the clinging jellyfish.
Where's the one for New Jersey? That's what I want to see. But I'm just giving everybody a warning, you know, for lifeguards out there. You have to be careful.
I actually think I had some people come up and ask me about them, and I did not know what they were talking about. I thought they were just another
I tell you what, this is what they I could have sworn I saw jellyfish this weekend or last weekend. I've seen a few dead horseshoe crabs. And so I don't, you know, that because they're dead doesn't mean anything. But I wanted to do a little research on this. I haven't had time. I thought maybe you guys have, you know, looked into it. But I don't know what's going on here.
With the jellyfish?
Yeah, why they're migrating here and how dangerous they are.
Well, I just skimmed through this article and it says it's not really known. However, the study of them apparently can lead to breakthroughs in cancer research. I don't know.
But how dangerous, like, what are they stinging around here?
So basically what happens is you get stung by one of these and it's not even like that bad, but it has some sort of toxin that slowly seeps through your bloodstream so that like up to 5 hours later you're in excruciating pain.
Well, I don't know. You know, we'll have to do a little research.
18 to 20 people in Rhode Island.
When
ended
was this?
Up going to the hospital.
When was that? Like how old? How long ago was that?
Several years ago.
Oh, okay.
In August.
So, all right. The thing that I've seen is box jellyfish, and I know in Australia they'll kill you. The box jellyfish is tiny, tiny, tiny. So small, you can't even see it, and that's why a lot of people, if you go in the water in Australia, you'll wear a full wetsuit. You'll wear a hat. You try to cover all your skin so you don't have any skin exposure. And we do have the box jellyfish in Tortola.
Oh, yeah, look at the far right one. The guy holding it. I didn't know that. I thought they were bigger than that.
No, tiny, tiny.
They're tiny.
I actually thought they were smaller than that.
They could kill you. Those are some nasty jellyfish. Look at the see the guy's arm. How it's all scarred up like that.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. And they don't. You're swimming out there. You're snorkeling. You get hit by that. You know, a couple of them, you could go down. You could go down real quick, you know.
While we're on weird sea creatures, I just found out what a scarf octopus is. It literally just, like, it's an octopus that, like, unfolds this, like, the 20-foot ribbon behind it that just glows in, like, the pitch-black ocean.
Yo, we saw a lot of the same stuff on the internet today.
Yeah, we
look at that.
Probably very similar algorithms.
Look at this jellyfish here next to this scuba diver. No, yeah, look how big that is. That's huge.
But what was that one? The carpet?
I thought it was called a scarf.
Scarf
or blank? A scarf sounds right.
Scarf octopus. Click.
No, that's some darlings with scarves on. This girl, that's
there's
a girl.
There's an octopus scarf.
There's hot-looking girls with an eye. Look how stupid that looks.
I would wear that.
No, I think she looks good.
This is it, right?
I think so.
Talk about that. I wish I had my camera with those two girls on the beach. You know, there was two girls on the beach with hula hoops doing all kinds of, you know, really, really good at it. And I went down there, and they were characters, man. Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's pretty. You
pretty incredible,
that.
Right?
Yeah, the colors are amazing. Totally amazing.
But the way, I'm assuming Sean and I saw the same video, the way it like, see, it's all, this is it with it all wrapped up.
Yeah.
And then it just unfolds this like beautiful, basically like a cape behind it. It looks like silk.
You know, that's amazing. You know, that thing you talk about unfolding? That's a huge field now, because you know with the satellites, they go up there, and then the solar panels all unfold. That technology of folding and unfolding,
the unfolding industry is blowing up.
That's an interesting industry, but also, you know, there's a lot of things that'll do that.
Well, that's like the new telescope they launched.
Yeah,
all dependent on this like incredibly fragile mirror unfolding perfectly once they launch it out.
So we wear hats in the OR, you know, like they go over your head, like you know. Now how they come in a package, they're super thin. They're about that, and it all folded up and it unfolds, and that's all that new technology. So it's packaging stuff. You can put stuff really tightly together.
Minimal.
Yeah. So maybe they got that from the octopus folding up stuff. Pretty neat.
Did you guys see this kid jump off a cruise ship?
I've heard about this.
Watch this.
And they never found him, right? He commits. They got pictures of him.
Oh. So, one of the, so apparently this kid got dared to jump off this cruise ship.
And he did.
And he did, and then just, look, disappears, gone.
I've heard the number in like 1 year, it was like 17 people have jumped off, or no, like 260, 290 people have jumped off cruise ships. Only like 17 of them were recovered in like 1 year.
Did he just go down there? He just drowned?
He drowned.
So, no. Look at this, though. And this is why people are saying, so if you look, they throw a buoy out, right? But the kid goes and then swims in the other direction. He starts swimming in the other direction away from the buoy. They think he saw a shark, and then he just disappears. And apparently these were like shark-infested waters.
So they never found him.
They never found him. Yeah, that knows? Like that right there. He might not. We just saw the last right, he was ever right, saw. Right.
He may not have seen the buoy or the boat. The waves.
He deliberately started swimming away from it.
And yeah, maybe he got pushed that way.
And in some videos, you can kind of see like a figure going after him.
Yeah, he might have got pushed over too. Who knows? They probably drowned. Anyway, yeah, it's stupid to jump on the boat. Yeah.
So dumb. It's a massive.
And it might be. And water might have been a lot colder than he thought, and then he just went down real quick. You know.
I think he got tagged.
I don't think it'll hit you that fast. I doubt it. That ship's moving real quick. Sharks are not going to be like that.
They circle those things.
Nah, they don't.
Yes, they do. They're dumping stuff off those cruise ships all day.
They might be following him, but I doubt it. You know.
There's other things that could have got him. Like the
nothing. He could have just drowned, went under.
No, but the propeller in the back, like it's massive. It's probably the size of this house.
Right. When he jumped off, the boat's moving. There's water dynamics. It probably pushed him.
Pulled him through under.
You got to remember, he went this way. The boat went that way. You know. So,
whatever. Google told me I'm wrong, but I don't care.
I think, no, it could have been a shark too, but like, he definitely died. We know that.
It's not good. Shark's not going to be at that opportune moment.
He also could have been drunk, thought he was funny, swam away from the buoy, thinking he'd get saved eventually, and didn't.
Listen, I've seen people do stupid things.
No lifeguards on that cruise ship.
No.
And if they are, they're not doing a good job.
A lot of these people who jump off, well, he was just drunk and stupid, and that's sad. But there's people who kill themselves, they just jump off, and that's it.
Yes. Maybe that contributes to your statistic.
It was like 260, 290, 17 of them got rescued. That's a crazy stat in 1 year for like such a popular attraction, cruise ships.
And all, wow.
Right?
You know what? Here's the thing. If you really want to be on the safe side, I mean, I don't think this cruise ship could afford it, but there's personal tracking devices. And they're like little mini EPIRBs. So when we're sailing, we have our main EPIRB, and then there's times where they handed out personal EPIRBs. You clip them on. They're a little small.
Yeah, I don't believe a cruise ship's going to do it. But I hear you. I know.
They're expensive. But the thing is, you could bring your own. But if I'm not going to fall off a cruise ship, I'm not going to fall off unless somebody throws me off. But my point is that, you know, if you fall off where I'm, you'll at least be tracked. You know where with private boats. How most people wind up falling off the boat? What's the situation that makes them fall off the boat?
First of all, shitty driver.
No, I tell you what. Most of it's men. To give you an idea, a lot of men are out there. You know, they're moving boats around stuff. Mm-hmm. But what's the most common thing that they're doing when they
are they peeing?
Yes. they go to the side of the boat and go take a pee, and they fall off. And then, look, you know, so when we're sailing, right, we may have three captains, two are up and one is down. That's what, and then, so I'll go down, take, you know, instead of going to the bathroom, I'll take a pee. Well, I never do that in rough ocean anyway. I would never do that, but we're clipped in. So at night, we have these life preservers that inflate if you hit the water. And also, we're clipped in with a cord, and it's got like a shock cord, and then you always just. You're connected to the boat. There's lines that run through the boat. And you connect on. But at night, I would never, if the boat's moving, I mean, if it's night and you're parked there, you know, you're anchored up somewhere, but I would never go in the back of the boat, you know. And I'll tell you what, when you're sailing that kind of big ocean, it's rough. But if you fall off, the time, it could be hours before, you know, I mean, I would know because there's two of us up, but, it, you know, if it was only one up, and if you never came back, I'd go looking for you. But it'd be hard to find you at night. So I have to stop the boat, you know, if we have the sails up, I'd have to put the sails down or at least tighten them up. Turn around, go look for you. And there's actually a pattern that you follow with, you know, you do because you look at your compass, which way you're going.
I watched a really interesting video on that. Like, it's like
it's a whole.
It's you're covering like a circular area, but the I'd really have to rewatch the video. At the surface, it looks very unorthodox, but you're actually it's very like meticulous and
What you do
well plotted out. That
if you, every GPS now the stuff you have right now, electronics you have, you could press an emergency button and it marks that spot. So what you're doing is say you're going and somebody falls off. The first thing you do is you hit it and mark that spot. So then you have an idea where they fell off.
But that spot is constantly moving.
Yes. You're moving, they're moving, but at least you have a starting point. If you know which way the wind's blowing and the drift, you could calculate where they are. That's what the Coast Guard does. It's called drift and placement. But you also keep an eye on that person, try to throw a buoy at. That was smart that somebody threw a buoy at. That must have been a crew member because I don't think the people would have done. That's the first thing you do is throw a buoy at.
Think about the friend too that dared him to jump off, like having now.
Yeah, he's pissed off. But he's mad. But when you hit that,
I think he's upset.
But the thing is, can you think about a big cruise ship? First of all, that thing's probably going. Say it's going 10 knots. I don't know how many tons it weighs. For them to just to stop, slow down, it'll take a mile, probably a good mile before they can stop. Turn around, forget about it. I don't know what their protocols are. I would think if I would have a quick launch boat, like they have the boats that shoot off when the boat, it's a lifeboat, So I would have a crew and I would just, if it squirts right out, there's a launch, throw three guys in there, launch it, like real quick. And the boat could slow down and that boat could catch up and you go do a pattern. I would do that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what they do nowadays. I have no idea what the protocol is. But I know for me, we're at night because we've done from Tortola down to Grenada, and I've had Virginia. We have all people on the boat, and we don't even let them get close to the outside of the boat. If anybody leaves the cabin, they have to be hooked up and have the life preserver on. And the life preserver we have, it will automatically inflate. It's got lights on it, and like I said, it has EPIRB, so we could find you. So I don't have to worry so much. I could get the boat under control. You're not going to die. I mean, you worry about a shark, but the water's pretty warm. And we could see you, and we just put you on a GPS, and it bleeps, and we go right to you. So, but then you got to get the person in the boat. But anyway, it's pretty interesting stuff. So how many people died, Sean? How many people have jumped off the boats?
How many do you think, Cash?
What did you say, 300, 400? How many cruise ships in the past, say, 20 years?
In a year, it was about, over 250.
In 1 year?
In 1 year, 250 people jumped off the boat and only 17 were recovered.
What year is this now? This is
just 2019, 2020. I forget.
Holy shit. That many. So how many over thousands? No. That many people falling off cruise ships?
I'm pulling this stat out of my ass, but that's what I remember from it.
Whoa, that's a lot of people, man.
I said that two times before that.
I didn't pick it up on it. I was listening to you.
Are you questioning it now?
No, I thought. No, but you.
His reaction finally.
No, because it took me a while because I'm thinking in now. I'm thinking, did you say that for like ever, 200 people ever? But then I'm like, wait, did you say it in 1 year? That's,
In reality, one or two people go overboard each month out of roughly 2.5 million who cruise in the same time.
So one or two per month.
Or is this all ships?
I heard cruise matter. Ships, but honestly, think about how many cruise ships are actually out there.
But think about that. Two a month. That's 24 people a year. That's still a lot. I mean, I don't give a shit what boats.
No, but that's out of 2.5 million who cruise ship during that time frame.
But still, I know the percentage, but I didn't think,
Here's saying 25% of people are recovered.
Ooh, that's not good odds, man.
It's better than I was saying, though.
No, that's not good odds. 25%.
Look at this Google question. How did man fall off cruise ship?
Hit it. See what it says.
Man was a passenger on the Carnival Magic cruise ship, which was about 186 miles east of Jacksonville when he fell into the water. Security footage shows he leaned over the railing of his room balcony and fell in around 4 a.m. on Monday.
Drunk.
When is this from, though? This is probably from like years ago.
Why did man fall out of cruise ship?
Well, here's
when did man fall off?
See, here's an interesting thing. You look at a lot of this, and
this is a few days ago. Actually, this is May 30th.
Really?
Yeah, the Coast Guard is searching for a 35-year-old man who fell overboard while on a Carnival cruise ship near Florida on Monday. This was last Monday.
See, the thing is, you got to worry about, did somebody kill him? Was there a fight? Did they throw him overboard? You think about...
Right? Probably, not a bad place to kill someone.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, if you're in, like, an unhappy relationship.
I think that's how Stewie killed Lois.
That is how Stewie killed Lois. Yeah.
Classic.
Right. I think.
Threw her off the back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that you got a whole.
Yeah, he knows.
Like, who's going to.
I saw that episode.
See, who has jurisdiction, too? You know, there's maritime.
International waters.
Dr. Cashmore of the Coast Guard Auxiliary.
I could tell you.
You're the one to answer this question.
No, but I could tell you, there's different laws. If you're out over 200 miles, there's different laws that apply. Murder is murder. But let's just say, you know, you hire somebody to take a boat out there. There's different laws if, say, a captain or the crew get injured or hurt. It's not like on land. And maybe it changed, but it used to be a lot harder to, you know, sue somebody for that because it's inherent and dangerous out there. But now, I don't know. It's for the cruise ships. But think about it. If you're within 3 miles of land, say in the state of New Jersey, the jurisdiction is New Jersey. After 3 miles, it's federal. So then, you know, I don't know who takes care of that. So if you're between 3 miles and 200 miles, it's United States federal. If you're out past 200 miles, so you're out there now, say 300 miles, you're in international waters. Mm-hmm. So if something's a murder or somebody dies, who takes care of that? And it's where the ship is registered. Some of these ships that cruise in the United States are registered in Panama or, you know, India, wherever, where it's cheaper. So it's pretty interesting. It gets crazy. Nobody people think about that. But I didn't think that many, Sean. Two a month? Ooh.
Crazy.
That's crazy, man.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, you could, you know, we should sell, that's what we could put on our webpage, you know, personal identifying. If you're going to go on a cruise ship, buy them from us. We'll rent them out to you.
No, invite us on cruise ships. We'll keep people safe.
You'll be the lifeguard. Yeah, you'd have to jump in. I would jump in. If you're going to save somebody, I would definitely, you'd have to be tethered with a line or something, maybe like a couple hundred yards.
I wonder how much they pay the lifeguards on cruise ships.
I wouldn't say too much. Don't hold your breath on that one.
But is it enough?
No. Nah.
Is it enough?
Yeah. I've had friends who were doctors on ships, you know, like the Love Boat, that kind of thing. I had one buddy who was I don't know what his specialty was. I forget if it was emergency medicine or primary, but they paid him really well, and he cruised all around the world. So, you know, he was a physician.
What are you Googling? How much do lifeguards get paid?
On a cruise ship.
Oh, that's less than what I made.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's not much. But you get room and board, and you probably go all over the place.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't. That ain't enough money to.
All right.
All right, so listen. What was there anything else you wanted to talk about? I just want to recap, because I forget if we talked about Memorial Weekend and this weekend, but I just want to, you know, make a point for all the other lifeguards. This was one of the first Memorial Weekends that we had so many people in the water. Usually Memorial Weekend, the water's freezing cold. We have a lot of people on the beach, but we don't really have much water. We had multiple rescues. You had a big one. Monday was the wind blew like really hard, but it was wild. It was a wild time. It was very very unusual weather, and we had a really rough time. All the lifeguards. I think there was one drowning on Memorial Day in Sandy Hook. Was there one drowning 15-year-old kid? Yeah. So I think everybody did a really good job for the thousands and thousands and thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people we had at Jersey Shore. I think there was only one kid who drowned. We had bad water. We had, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. It was blowing northeast. What was it, 3 to 5, 3 to 4?
About.
You know, and rip currents, though, were cranking because prior to Memorial Weekend, the wind blew for about a week northeast. And in our area, northeast creates very bad water and really bad rip currents. And, you know, all the storms that we had during the winter really cut up the beach. So I got to give it to everybody. All the lifeguards in New Jersey did a great job. I was really surprised we didn't have more drownings. And I think also, you know, you had a lot of beaches started Memorial Weekend that never had started Memorial Weekend, like Lavalette. They never did Memorial. They started July, and now there's more police on the beach. I think things are coming around. I think there's more awareness of people could drown in the water. So we'll see how the rest of the summer goes, but mm-hmm. I was pretty impressed. We have T-shirts, right? We're going to get back. We could talk about that. We're going to start. My camera keeps going. We're gonna have T-shirts and anything else coming on. Your Instagram, you want to?
Follow us at lg.association. Email us at lifeguardsoffduty@gmail.com or Dr. Cashmore at iCloud.com.
We got to get our shirts on our internet, but we're going to try to get some film out there. Anyway, we're done. Thank you for listening to us. I think that was a pretty good show.
And, good show.
Yeah, I'm tired. I had root canal this morning, so I gotta, you know, I think I'm pretty good. I could talk and everything. So, all right, everyone, listen. Give us a call. You want to get a hold of us? It's Dr. Kaczmar at iCloud at iCloud.com. Dr. Kaczmar at iCloud.com. Give us a call. Just email us. We're here every week. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay out and stay alive. Stay out and stay alive.
Stay alive.
Take care.